This podcast is proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.
Hi, I'm Gordon Muller. I'm the guru in the Doc and Guru podcast. Thanks for being with us. For those of you who don't know me, I've spent over 40 years in the media industry in South Africa and pretty much made it my home, my life, my passion. I have other passions. Unfortunately, for my sins, I'm an Arsenal supporter and a Sharks supporter, so we're going to do pretty much everything on the show as it pertains to media, marketing, and money, but we don't take jokes about Arsenal or the Sharks.
I'm Doug Mateus, the doc on the show. And again, for those of you who don't know me, I spent 30 years in various companies in South Africa running different marketing functions. And the last job I had, I was privileged enough to work with a team that took the brand to the fastest growing brand in South Africa in 2018 with a 47% year-on-year growth. So that was a great achievement for the team, and I'm really proud of that. From a personal point of view, I do a little bit of cycling and also snow skiing, so we quite enjoy that. But again, today's discussion is around all things marketing and media.
Yep, that's right, Doc. All things marketing and media. No subject too big, no topic too small, no subject too hot to handle. Please get in touch with us on our Facebook page, follow us, like us, whatever it takes. We would love you to be involved with the show, and we really want to make it as inclusive and as energetic as I know this industry is capable of. And welcome to the Doc and Guru podcast, episode 151. Can't believe it. It's been a week since we were 150. And welcome to all the listeners out there. The Doc is away in London. I would just like to put an end to these scurrilous rumors that he's been sent there to take care of the Queen's corgis. That's not the case at all. But he does miss you all, and we're hoping to have him back pretty soon in the driving seat. But I have today a very special guest that I've worked very, very closely with over the years. He has spent the first half hour of our session this morning coaching me on how to pronounce his name, so I'm going to have a go at it. Chipiwe Mulautsi. We all know his chief, thank goodness. I could just call him chief from now on in. He's giving me like a 3 out of 5 rating for the effort there. Managing director of the MSG Group Sales. Chief, welcome to the show.
No, thank you so much, Mr. Gordon. And I think I haven't seen you this year.
We haven't seen each other this year. We normally have had, since we worked very closely together back in 2017, 2018. Yes. And we've had a kind of an annual get together, but we haven't had an annual get together this year. That's correct.
Yeah. So it's a privilege to be here, and I'm quite excited. Thank you so much for the invite.
Thanks for making the time. And let's talk a little bit about something which our listeners always find of interest, the journey. And yours is an unusual journey in the sense that you haven't done the kind of zigzag, you know, one job here, one job there. You're very much a man who enjoys, you know, working in the trench that you've been put and not sort of peeping out over the top to find a different one. Tell us a bit about that journey and how it's got you to MSG.
No, thank you so much. Yeah, I guess everybody has got a story to tell, you know, in their career journey, and mine is no different. So I think I have to go as far back as 2000. I just realized that it's almost just over 20 years now, actually. So just quick background. I spent a bit of time at the University of Pretoria. That's where I did my honors and masters in research psychology. That was back then in early 2000, actually. And I met the late Uomdan van Vieren. I'm sure you remember.
Uomdan, I think everybody, certainly of my age, all three of us that are left, remember Uomdan.
Yeah. So he actually is the man that played a huge role in my career for me to be here, probably sitting with you, because that was my first taste of the media industry. So he would normally take us to SABC, I remember, because I was doing an MA in research psychology, you would actually go and do presentations and get to meet people in the profession and all of that. That was 2000, 2001. And I then finally find myself actually full-time in the media industry as far back as 2002, 2003. I worked at SARF. I worked with the late Wompiet Smith.
I was just making a note on that. I think where you and I first met would have been at that point.
Yes. So, I mean, I spent some few years at South African Audience Research Foundation. There by 54 Queens Road in Bryanston. Yeah. So I had the late Pete Smith. I had Dr. Paul Hart as the MD of SARF.
Yes.
And because of my background in data and research, that played a huge role. And I was so fortunate because, I mean, I worked for an institution that was more of a joint industry in institution in terms of media research for all media, basically, whether it's television, radio, out of home, print. So I had the privilege of actually understanding media currency. And I started servicing, you know, clients, because I'll get a lot of queries from whether it's media owners, media agencies. I used to do training, actually. I used to do training with the late Wompiet Smith for the sector, whether it's marketers, advertisers, or media owners. They will actually send students, and we used to do trainings literally every week. I did that, and I got exposed to presenting to the industry whenever we release the latest data, whether it's AMS, whether it's TEMS, whether it's radio. So that gave me one leg up, literally. It was only in 2007 when I joined SABC. In fact, I was recruited there in 2007 as a research manager to look after television. And and I spent 12 years at SABC. So between 2007 and 2019, I held about four positions, whether in the middle management or most senior position. I mean, the last role, of course, was the group executive commercial enterprises. But when I look at how I landed into the media sales side of it, it's because of this understanding of data and how to commercialize audiences. So once you understand the commercial value of your audiences, because that's exactly what you're trying to sell, whether it's to the advertiser or the marketer is interested in that audience.
Yeah.
It was very easy.
Yeah,
and
I think
that's how I actually landed in this industry.
And I think you've made so many interesting points there in connecting the dots. Let's pick up on some of those key things. I mean, the personalities you've spoken about. I think we were blessed in this industry with some amazing research people. We also, onto that list, you'd add in Dr. Wally Langschmidt. And
they were the
icons of the day when it came to research. So South Africa, in those days, I think, really was at the forefront of research and the gateway to Africa in terms of research. I think there's been a shift in the dynamic, and a lot of the interesting research has been done outside of South Africa. But what intrigues me, and I never knew it, that, you know, your primary field of study is research psychology.
Yes.
That fascinates me because, I mean, I have a degree in psychology as well, but I've never really thought of connecting the dots on those two things. It seems to me that the psychology of research is increasingly important because it encapsulates a qualitative kind of interpretation of data, not just the straight quantitative stuff. Or am I getting too excited about the whole thing?
It's a very much focused program. So I know a lot of institutions, they have it as a full-time program. In fact, just last month, my alma mater, University of Pretoria, actually invited me to be on the panel to shortlist, because they normally admit only 8 students per year on their MA program. So they said, we'd like you to be part of the panel that shortlists 8 students for 2023. So I was quite privileged with that. But they put you through this rigorous program for 12 months, actually a 2-year program.
Yes.
And you have to love statistics.
Yeah.
You have to love statistics. You have to, so, but it's a it's absolute approach to social research, media research, yeah. And it's quite involved. So I was very fortunate from that point of view, because that's where I got to meet all these names and men that actually introduced me to this world of media research. And of course, SARF gave me access to all of you, hey?
Yeah.
It gave me access to all of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, love statistics is an intriguing thought. And I think for me, if I look at media, and and I'm pretty consistent in what I've said over the years, if you want to love statistics, you've got to, the starting point is the recognition that each one of those numbers represents a relationship. A relationship between a consumer and a product, between a consumer and a media platform. And the moment you realize that every single piece of data talks about some essential human state,
yeah.
Then it becomes easy to love statistics. When you think statistics is just, you know, a sequence of connected or disconnected numbers, you can't love an inert number unless you're a statistician or a mathematician.
Absolutely.
So marketing statisticians recognize that it's paint by numbers.
Absolutely. I mean, think about how fragmented the media is today. Okay, just think about it. I remember back then we used to talk about the future of media, but today I think traditional media is so fragmented because of this digital wave and how consumers consume media. And you still have to have data to back your story, whether commercially or from a business point of view, where you have to make business decisions. You require the data. So that's been my privilege,
yeah.
In so many ways. And So when you talk about, okay, how do I commercialize a radio station of a specific target market? What does it mean from a pricing point of view? Because now you're running a business and you gotta run it in a profitable way. You gotta understand the currency. So I always say, currency is like the reserve bank, it's the central bank, really. Mm. In the absence
of. Suggesting to the postgrad students that in this class you're not entitled to your opinion,
yeah.
You're only entitled to your informed opinion. It sounds a bit brutal until you explain it. You said it earlier, data is currency. If you cannot inform your opinion, how do you put a price to your opinion? I'm not interested in Chief's opinion. I'm interested in his opinion because he's had 20 years of frontline research experience. That's why I listen to you, not because you're, you know, a nice guy, you know, who's better dressed than me, I might say. I'm used to looking at the doc, and this, the level of fashion in the studio has been heightened enormously. Doc, nothing personal, but you're going to have to work on your dress code when you get back. So let's bring it back. You talk about mainstream media, yes. To MSG. Now, that in and of itself is a really fascinating story, the initial founding of MSG, and, you know, how you go about the marketing of those two big brands, Capricorn and Power FM, which are landmarks in the radio industry.
Yeah. You know, Power is nine years old.
Yeah, I know. And I can tell you, interestingly enough, I was involved in a counter pitch for that license with Stan the Man, now Stan the Manager, Katz. We put together, I think, a very, very strong pitch for that license, and we didn't get it, but I at least had the consolation of recognizing, once I read through your proposal, which yes. We were then allowed to do,
yes.
It made sense.
Yeah.
So, sometimes you lose to a side that's better than you are, and that was a fair shot for me.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the last 9 years.
Yeah, so Power is nine, and Capricorn is 15 years old.
Yeah. Yeah,
can you believe it?
Now that one, I'm more surprised to hear, quite frankly, and it goes to a point that I did a lot of work with Greg Malocca at
yes.
Kaya FM, we talked about the inconvenient truth. Yeah. And I think the inconvenient truth is sometimes you don't sell yourself properly.
Yeah.
So whether it's, you know, whatever you, whatever brand you are, that you've got to sell yourself. And I think Capricorn didn't sell itself well for a good chunk of those years.
Yeah. So I mean, let's start with Capricorn FM. So the station is 15. It's 15 years old. It's got 520,000 listeners on a weekly basis. And Limpopo is an interesting market because the latest stats SA numbers, they peg Limpopo as the fifth largest province in terms of populace.
Mm.
After Gauteng, KZN, Eastern Cape, Western Cape, and then Limpopo is the fifth largest. Can you believe that there's only one commercial radio station there?
No, it is crazy. And then, although, I mean, I think we both know, and you'll know better than me, that the lines between PBS and commercial have blurred to a degree, but it doesn't make sense. And it speaks to a bigger problem, you know, which is this obsession that marketers have with national TV coverage. And I've just done an exercise which some of these listeners might be familiar with MediaMark, which show that there's no such thing as universal national coverage on television. And provinces that come short are the Western Cape and Limpopo.
Yes.
Very often the KZN province is overweighted because there seems to be a kind of default button which says, if I've got a commercial in Zulu in a Zulu program, I've got national coverage. And they forget that places like Limpopo, the Western Cape, it doesn't necessarily play out there. So there's an overweight very often in KZN and an underweight Limpopo, Western Cape, and sometimes in Mpumalanga to a degree as well.
Yeah. So we're the only commercial radio station. Of course, there's SABC, three radio stations, Tovela, Mungana, Lonene, Palapala FM. But that's how we have managed to position ourselves as well. So I suppose from that point of view, there's a market also for us that is so unique because our content as a commercial radio station will largely be about Limpopo, Limpopo lifestyle, the target market that we basically serve, which is basically LSM 5 to 8, that middle market, you know. And Power is an interesting story. I mean, Power has got 261,000 listeners on past 7 days. And you will have noticed that we are almost touching 500,000 in terms of Twitter followers.
That's the. I want to come to that point in a moment, but yeah, please continue.
Yes. So, and the positioning of the station, of course, is we say we exist to sponsor the nation's progress. So that's our positioning. If you listen to Power story, we are saying that. I think South Africa goes through so much. Just look at what we are going through since last week Friday.
Yes.
It's energy crisis in terms of Eskom and all of that. You'll be surprised that we don't do a lot of politics actually on that radio station. If anything, our listeners raise issues that are of concern in their lives to South Africa in general because we tend to attract, you know, the professionals that are leaders in one way or the other, and they want to find expression. All they want is to find expression so that they can contribute to building this country. So that's our positioning, and I think it's quite a unique position. And I think to be a talk radio, in the, especially today, it's actually a privileged space because it is one medium which I believe best. Social media. Think about it. Talk radio, it sort of says to you, you gotta be an active listener that is engaging with content and issues. Just think about it. Whereas a music radio station, it's like a background sound. Whereas talk radio is conversation, thought leadership and all of that. So We believe that we're in a privileged space because you just look at all the issues that affect South Africa today. Our listeners will find expression and they want to address those and to say, how do we move this country forward? So it's a, it's quite a privilege. Absolute privilege.
You're listening to The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media.
The talk radio component is intriguing. And, you know, it just occurs to me, when 702, we had Stan Katz on a couple of weeks back talking about the evolution of talk radio, which was 702, and a very different political climate where talk, there was no talk, there was no public talk. I mean, we even had redacted front pages of newspapers. There was heavy censorship. So people were looking to talk and engage. We've got past that. Maybe we've got spoiled now. I think the problem now, that I'm your problem to an extent, that people have the freedom to talk. I've got grumpy. I don't want to listen anymore. How do you balance the freedom of speech with encouraging people to listen? I mean, maybe it's just because I'm you know, kind of old and grumpy, but even young people are disinclined to listen. And we saw that in the Edelman Trust Barometer. 59% of people say their default position is distrust around the world. 63% say that this country, in inverted commas, whichever country you were being interviewed in, we're not capable of having a civil discussion. So how do you balance the need for talk with the need to encourage me to listen, because I might actually come out of it, the exchange, better?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I always say talk radio has got its regular callers, by the way.
No, you can spot them, and it's Buti from Balmoral or whatever. Now I get it.
Sometimes they'll say they're like different names, but it's got its regular callers. Yeah. But I believe that the real listeners of talk radio don't actually call. They actually don't phone in. They don't call. They just want to listen.
Yeah.
If you do a correlation, and I don't think I've actually done that, I would like to challenge you to say, is there a way in which we can do a correlation between talk radio and active engagement on social media of that particular radio station? I suspect the engagements will be very high, because talk radio allows for people to express, and they will use a platform such as Twitter, which is very much real time.
Yes.
So as things happen, you want to be part of those conversations. So, yeah, but for South Africa in particular, and our listeners, I think the audience that we serve has not had the opportunity to find a platform to express.
Yes.
So we are quite new. We are fairly new. And I believe the audience that we serve will continue to grow with us. Often our listeners will tell us that, look, power is the Woolies of radio. That's how they put it, by the way. Power is not a radio station. It's actually an academic institution. That's how they describe it. It's amazing. Yeah. So, and you'll find this loyal listenership that continues to permeate. It comes through consistently. So I believe that we serve a very special audience, unique audience that wants to see South Africa move forward. And they are not, I don't think they are tired or anything. They want to actively engage and participate on issues that affect whether themselves in their immediate situations or South Africa in general.
Yeah. So let's come back to that figure, the weekly figure, 261,000. And a 450,000 on Twitter. So there's a big gap there.
Yes.
Same sort of pattern for Capricorn. So your point, I think, is well made. That, and I see it with other radio stations as well, that there's a listening base, but there's a higher level of engagement on social media platform, particularly Twitter. That there doesn't seem to be the same appeal on Facebook or Instagram, maybe because, and that probably makes sense, because that's visual.
Yes.
So if I'm listening, I'm not going to go visual, but I want to talk. So how do you balance out the commercial, the holistic commercial value of that exchange? I can listen to you, you can advertise to the listener, and you can engage with me on the social media platform.
It's actually interesting, and I gotta say this. I have learned so much It's almost 3 years now at MSG, by the way. I joined in 2020, so just now, end of 2022 in December, I will have done my 3 years. Because it's compared to where I come from, I mean, SABC, you're talking 19 radio stations,
yes,
four television channels. Imagine the size of that.
It's just big volume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you, because of the fact that it's an institution that has been there for years and years, and here you move to a relatively young organization, you then realize that, you know what, there are so many opportunities to learn new things,
yes,
actually. And that's what I've learned, that there's not a single campaign that I would run or do which does not integrate this other audience that comes through platforms such as Twitter and so on and so on. It's actually amazing. And every time in the packaging of it, if you exclude it, most of my clients will say, you know what, we would like to find expression there. So I we are quite deliberate even in how we package ourselves. We are not just a terrestrial frequency medium. We are a platform that delivers these audiences through different touch points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just coming back to the listeners, and you use the phrase, you know, concerning yourself with the nation's progress or driving the nation's progress.
Yes.
And linking back to the thought of the Edelman Trust Barometer, where it's now emerging,
yes,
that trust is probably the key differentiator between audiences. You can,
yes,
have a big audience that nobody trusts, you know, where nobody trusts the platform, or a smaller audience where there's a trust. And I showed it in my presentation with MediaMark that where there's trust, the levels of engagement, the very thing you posed as a theory earlier on, are there. In fact, if it's a trusted platform on radio in South Africa, you get twice the level of engagement.
Wow.
And that I've extracted that from the Nielsen Trust in Advertising report. It's very real. It's not.
Yes.
It's gone beyond theory. So we're going now into a critical phase of elections. How do you balance trust with that point I referred to earlier, that even a commercial station carries the burden of PBS to a degree? How are you going to play out the next 12 months or however long it is to elections? Might be longer. I've lost track of time.
So I think any media or medium which is regulated in some shape or form, certainly radio, because remember we get our license from ICASA, the regulatory, and there are all these other institutions that hold us accountable, the BCCSA in particular. It means that we have to adhere to certain standards.
Mm.
And I think that's been the true benefit, advantage of a radio, certainly. Because you can't just put out information which you have not verified.
Right.
I think that's a very important point.
Yeah.
Because you know that if you just tweet something that you are not running on air, it'll get you in trouble.
So there's cross-verification. You get a sense that your listeners are cross-checking you.
Yeah, certainly. And I don't think there's a single radio station that can put out a tweet that has not been verified.
Okay.
I think that's a key differentiator. That's why we remain a trusted media in so many ways. Because the information that you put out, it means it's been verified. If it's a story, you can't just tweet or put out a story that has not been verified, because you know that you're held accountable by the regulator.
Yeah.
I think that puts us in a better place.
Yeah.
That's why we will forever remain a trusted medium medium in so many ways.
Look, I think it's refreshing to hear from a management perspective that you buy into that. There are plenty of examples of media in this country, not necessarily broadcast, who are governed by those regulations, but management has chosen to completely and utterly ignore them. So I think it's great to hear a management in touch with that, because there's an end benefit. It's not all about compliance.
Yeah.
It's actually in the best interest of your reader, not picking on anybody in the reading space particularly, your listener or your viewer.
Yes.
But your journey, you know, has been an interesting one. And just before we wrap up, you know, I'm just so impressed with, you know, the long slog up, you know, through the SABC. It was a long haul.
Yes.
You climbed up at a 45-degree angle, and you kept climbing till you got to the top. You in your new position, you're climbing up again. And what sort of words of encouragement would you have for younger people coming into media, and advice for that matter, on building a career? Does it have to be a case of every time you want to go up another notch on your 45-degree path, you have to change companies? How do you go about building your career where you are?
Yeah, and it, I mean, mine is interesting because, as I said earlier, I remember in the early 2000s, it was so easy to move around, the so-called job hopping. You know, you could move easily, especially in our industry, where you could be, you know, appointed as an insights manager of some media company and all of that. But I decided to stick around because at that stage I felt I needed to hone in the skills, to understand the sector, particularly from a data point of view, because that's been the one differentiator for me. So the fact that I could understand the currency better, I mean, it gave me that one advantage. By the time you come and you start to talk commercial language, it's easy because you understand how to price this this product that you're responsible for.
Yeah.
How to price it correctly, how to package it, how to sell so that it gives you a good number at the top. So I think my advice to the young ones, and I think we are doing an injustice, Gordon. I'm not sure how much of investment we are putting just in terms of developing the young talent. You know, our sector surely does contribute significantly to the South African GDP. And you and I, for example, especially yourselves, you're not going to be here forever. But I'm glad that you're doing this because this is one way of disseminating information, knowledge, and just to ensure that the young ones continue to learn and so on and so on. So you got to know what you want. That's that, for me, that's the first thing. So I knew that my quickest way to understand the sector was understanding all media through data.
Yeah.
I just knew that if you were to take me to print today, I will not struggle. If you were to take me to television, I mean, I ran television, and I'm also proud to say that when we're still at SABC, I think the team that I had, we were the best performing team in terms of commercial performance for that institution, and I argue that probably we left it at the top. But for me, data, and of course passion, and I didn't need to move around because there's no point of moving around if you're not honing one single skill.
Mm-hmm.
What's the point of you just moving around, try to get a better salary, when in fact, in truth, you if you were to be asked to do one single thing, you can't do it. So I needed to specialize on something, and I can tell you that understanding the media currency was the one thing that got me so far.
Yeah, I think that really is a powerful insight that you know, maximize your knowledge within your field of skill and interest. That's really critical. Sometimes we are so obsessed with thinking outside the box. You know, we've had this discussion, the Doc and I, many times, that people forget very often, you know, 90% of boxes are there for a good reason.
Yes.
Okay, people, you're not the first person in the world who's figured out a problem.
Yeah.
So be the best in the box is a legitimate way to play, you know, to play your hand. The box will adjust its own parameters.
Yeah.
You know, it's arrogant, I think, to believe that you can always think outside the box. It implies that the box is always static, which is really an insult to your colleagues. The box is growing and expanding as every intelligent person contributes to the box. So build your knowledge in the box and build from there. Just coming back to the point of training, I had an interesting conversation last week with Hayden Townsend, and we were somebody at a Mags on Media breakfast, which was really good to see Jeremy Mags, by the way. All you listeners out there, yeah. Mags on Media, hopefully we're going to be seeing more of those breakfasts coming forward. We discussed some interesting topics, but the point was made by somebody that there are wonderful skills in the interest, and in chatting to Hayden, took a slightly different point of view. And I lapsed back to something I remember from my very poor knowledge of science in my matric year. But what I did recall is that things have energy. Energy is neither created nor destroyed. So this coffee cup here on the table that I'm demonstrating with has what we call latent energy. Now, if I introduce a variable, i.e. my hand, and I knock it onto the floor, it has kinetic energy. Yes. So it hits the floor, and then I think, is it E equals MC squared, energy times the speed at which it plummets, yes, gives you the force. Okay, yes. So at the end of the day, I don't think we've got skills in this industry. I think we've got latent skills. We've got potential energy. And if we don't introduce the variable to start the process of kinetic and then force, it's just going to sit there. We've got wonderfully talented young people. We've got bright people. Yeah. I wouldn't even attempt to get into a discussion on that. In fact, I've said it before and I'll say it again now. Many of them smarter than I was at the same stage of my development. But if you don't put the variable in place, which is training and skills transfer, then that energy will just remain latent. That's absolutely my concern.
Yeah, absolutely. So I just... We have to continue believing and investing in young people. Certainly at MSG, where I get opportunities, I try to recruit young people, and I try to get them, raw, like literally where you can just see the potential, and you gotta try to be patient and try to get these people to the level where you believe that they will learn. But I think the magic wonder for me is you gotta have to hone in at least one or two skills. You can't just be a generalist.
Those days are gone. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, the days of being a generalist and that's gone. There's just too much information, too many dynamics. Yep. Can't be done anymore. But, you mentioned earlier the old days back at SAF, where every time a database was launched, it was accompanied by training. Well, you'll be pleased to hear that early October, the BRC and the PRC will be launching another iteration of the Fusion study, which is a massive database which will pull together television and radio audience and reading audience and branded consumption, including digital consumer behavior, into one massive database with Fusion. And I've been tasked to take that out to the industry, to explain how to extract the best value from that database. Wow. So I'll be available for doing that. So watch the press from the BRC to our listeners and the PRC and Nielsen. And I will be available at no charge to come through to agencies, to clients, show you how to extract the value, how to get the best out of it. And that program will run through until February of next year. So please avail yourself of that. And I'm going to throw myself into that project. Wow. The sooner we get on top of that data, and that's, I know there's other data out there, but we've got to differentiate between free data, which is available to the industry, versus data which is paid for.
Yes.
And not knocking the paid for data, but there's a difference between paid for data and access to free quality data. So watch out for the launch of the Fusion study. Chief, thank you for coming in. I've really enjoyed it, and it's good to see you smiling and relaxed and looking so positive about life. We don't get to see enough of our colleagues anymore, and Zooming doesn't do it for me. So thanks for the time, and a closing word for the listeners.
No, thank you. It's been an absolute honor and a privilege to have spent this 30 minutes with you. And I look forward to further engagements, and congratulations on this Fusion study, and let's keep on pushing and making sure that we advance our industry. We have to continue growing. Thank you so much.
And that's it. That's all we got for today. I'm looking forward to having the doc back from his London sojourn, and I'm quite keen to hear from him what it's been like there in London during the Queen's kind of ceremonial departure. And to all you listeners out there, ciao for now.
And so that was another episode of the Doc and the Guru. Please don't forget to get a hold of us on Facebook, like us, follow us, subscribe to the podcast. And then from my side, you can get a hold of me on LinkedIn, Dr. Doug Mateus. I'm very active and very keen to hear about your views, and certainly will respond, and hopefully we can bring that into the show.
Thanks, Doc, and it's Gordon Miller, the Guru, signing off. Thank you for being with us and listening into this podcast today. You can pick up the discussion with me on my Twitter handle, @MzanziMedia, and I'd love to engage with you on any of the issues that we've taken on the show. And take us at our word. This is really going to be an open forum. There are no subjects that are taboo, and we'd love to have some of the younger, more under-listened, if that's the correct phrase, voices to join us in this discussion. Thanks for your time.
The Doc and the Guru, proudly brought to you by Infinity Media, incubating innovative businesses in the media industry.